The scary thing is for some people is that most employers today and most brokers today have not lived through a true hard market. Because again, we haven't had one for 13 years. And in a hard market, carriers exit California.
Welcome to the Self-Insurance Podcast brought to you by CRMBC. Every week, we are interviewing restaurant owners, industry experts, and brokers to explore the world of self-insurance for the California restaurant industry. Hello, and welcome to the Self-Insurance Podcast. My name is Kaya Stanley. I'm joined here today with John Roten, who is the Senior Vice President and Principal at the Path Alliance, and who also happens to be the former Chief of the Office of Self-Insured Programs for the state of California. Welcome, John.
Hi, Kaya.
So John is really one of the experts in self-insurance that of all time, and he has worn many hats in this field, and he really can talk more about self-insurance than anyone I know. John, tell us some more about some of the other hats that you've worn in this field.
Sure. Well, I've been an employer, so I've signed paychecks and bought self-insurance prior in my life. However, I became the assistant chief at Cal OSHA, responsible for safety in California, and then subsequently became the chief, as you mentioned, in OSIP, Office of Self-Insurance Plans. And at OSIP, I had responsibility as the chief regulator for more than 7,000 employers statewide. And with that, there's about $22 billion in risk exposure I had to oversee and responsible for underwriting, regulations, and making the whole system work well. Recently, I've joined the PATH Alliance about 5 years ago as both a principal and then also as a senior vice president. And the PATH, what we do is we help companies become self-insured, as well as we are a group self-insurance administrator.
The reason that this is such a huge deal is, one, PATH is the administrator for CRMBC, of which I'm the CEO. So we work together very closely. But the other thing that was really important to our board and our membership, John literally wrote the regs on self-insured groups for California. So now he is responsible for making sure we comply with the regs. So that helps us to sleep better at night in our self-insured group, at least. But John, you took this route of from law enforcement, self-insurance, safety, all of these things, and you ended up landing your plane in self-insurance. Tell me more about that decision. Why is self-insurance your thing?
Well, as I mentioned, I've been an employer, so I know what it is to be an employer and responsible for workplace safety and for workers' comp. After being the chief of OSIP, I really saw it. Self-insurance is really almost one of the best kept secrets out there that most employers aren't aware of. I firmly believe that it's a phenomenal advantage that we have in California, how the program is set up and how it works, and can provide literally a competitive advantage for employers in operating their businesses. And most employers, most brokers aren't aware that it even exists, or they have a lot of misconceptions about what it is.
And we talk a lot about the fact that even if you don't understand it, just one entryway into understanding self-insurance in general is that the largest, most successful businesses in the world self-insure. They don't go through traditional insurance companies. So that's kind of an entryway to start to understand this. Why is it that the largest, most successful companies would never go through traditional insurance?
Well, they've done the business case analysis. They've looked at and identified what makes the most sense for them. And self-insurance offers a few things to employers. It offers greater control over their workers' compensation program. It also offers improved outcomes, both for the employer, but also for their employees. And they have a lot of control over not only the program, the claims, but also how the employees are treated and how the process works. And it also, cost-wise, is the most effective and lowest cost, total lowest cost option of the various types of self-insurance or workers' comp insurance there are.
And it's not like the employer just decides to self-insure and then they have to hire new people to figure out insurance. There's a whole structure that is set up within the system where, for example, CRNBC is a self-insured group where there's standalone self-insured businesses or a bunch of businesses come together. But we have a board and we have a structure of different service providers that are required by regulation to provide those services. Why don't you explain that structure?
Sure. So as you mentioned, large companies, Disney, Marriott, Kaiser, PG&E, big companies can become self-insured on their own, and they have large departments to do this. However, the average employer, the companies that are mid-size and smaller, have the ability to join a self-insured group. And with that, there's a whole structure put in place from the regulatory standpoint with OSIP. And in the self-insured group, there's a board of trustees that are members of the group. Their employers, just like for CRNBC, for example, they're restaurateurs, just like everybody that's a member of the group. They set the policy and the guidance and the direction of the group, and they are responsible for administering it. They hire a company like PATH, my company, to be a group administrator. We're kind of the business agent, if you will, where we make sure the lights are on, bills get paid, claims get paid, and kind of run the business day to day. And then we oversee the other contractor vendors for the group, the actuaries, the certified public accountants, and all the things that make it, and the third party administrator, the claims administrator, to make it all come together and be a successful group. The key thing that people don't get is that a self-insured group is a nonprofit. So it doesn't exist to make a profit. It exists to benefit its members, which are the insureds. I'll use the term member or insured kind of interchangeably.
And you often talk about the fact that traditional insurance is sort of like going to a casino. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. Well, you have large insurance companies and they're very successful at what they do. But much like a casino, an insurance company, the house never loses. And it's important to remember that. In California, for example, carriers, they just posted literally record profits. I mean, Geico alone, for example, posted $16 billion in profit. And what the profit is after you pay the claims and pay to administer the policies and do all the things that you're buying insurance for, profit's all that add-on on top of it. And as a result of that, that's money that in a nonprofit, like a self-insured group, it doesn't exist. That's money that the insured or the members get to keep and keep in their pocket and put back in their business to run their business and make profit themselves.
And in a nonprofit like CRNBC, a self-insured group, when we have surplus, it doesn't go to shareholders. We have the option of returning it to our members in the form of dividends. And in fact, we just did one a couple of years ago. So that's one of the other benefits of self-insuring through a self-insured group. Now, John, there's a lot of other types of vehicles like captives and high deductible plans. Talk a little bit about all of the different options out there and why, out of all of those, you still believe that self-insurance is the best option.
Sure. Generally, there are four types of ways an employer in California has to have workers' comp insurance. It's the law. There are generally four ways you can satisfy that. You can buy a workers' compensation policy. You can buy something called a high deductible policy where you have a carrier do part of it, and then the employer pays part of the fees. There is a captive, and that's where a group of people come together and they own the company. But you still have to, with the captive, there are some problems. They're very complex. There's tax consequences and issues. You have to post collateral. And then you also have to hire an insurance company anyway to front the policy because captives can't exist in California. So you're an out-of-state captive that does business in California. And then there's self-insurance as the fourth or alternative option. And again, I'm a firm believer that self-insurance really is the best option because you cover the costs of insurance, you get the job done, but you're not paying profits, putting money in shareholders' pockets, paying for marketing gimmicks and stuff of, you know, spokes animals or other things like that. It's about staying focused on running whatever the employer's business is and taking care of their obligation for their employees and to provide workers' comp.
What do you say, John, to the people that are afraid of self-insurance? They're afraid of the risks. They think that they're, if there's, you know, something catastrophic, that they're going to become bankrupt. Give me like a risk-benefit analysis of self-insuring versus just going the traditional amount and putting your money in a traditional insurance company.
Sure. Well, generally, as I mentioned earlier, self-insurance is either misunderstood or it's the best kept secret. And for folks that are, you know, fearful or afraid, they fall in kind of two categories. There's the brokers and then there's the employers. And for the employers, I really believe they just don't know enough about it. They haven't gotten enough information or become educated to really understand how self-insurance works. There are a lot of safeguards in how self-insurance works. For the brokers, the brokers kind of fall in two categories. There's brokers that are very happy just doing business, you know, day to day and doing the traditional way, selling insurance, collecting their commission, and not doing anything different. Then there's the educated broker, and that's a different animal. And they're very sharp. They want to learn more, know more. And they're the ones that learn about self-insurance and offer that as an option or alternative.
Let's talk about some of the safeguards that are in place to protect a self-insured group.
Sure. And that's a great question and a good place to start because, as I mentioned, education is critical, having information. A self-insured group, CRNBC is an example. As you mentioned, it's a nonprofit. It's a corporation. It's governed by California corporation laws, the same as an insurance carrier would be. It provides workers' comp insurance. That's all it does for its members. However, it has a board of trustees, and then the protections in place, you have a robust set of regulations by the State of California Office of Self-Insurance Plans, OSIP, that set the guidelines and the standards. Annually, a group has to have an actuarial study done by an independent actuary to determine what their exposure and liabilities are, and then they have to set their budget for the coming year based on those liabilities to be sure they're covered. So there's a safety net there. The groups always have independently audited annual financial statements. Again, another safety net to be sure that they're dealing with true, accurate, independently verified information. There are controls in place. The group is required to report frequently and file a number of regulatory reports with OSIP. And then they also file those with the California Self-Insurer Security Fund, which oversees kind of the credit risk side of self-insurance. And so you have two different agencies kind of looking over the shoulder of the board of trustees, the group administrator, and the groups to be sure that they're functioning properly, setting appropriate budgets, and putting money aside for what needs to be taken care of.
Which can be onerous from us, but on the other hand, it's what, again, that in addition to having the former head of OSIP overseeing our activities makes us sleep better at night because it does make sure that we're not going to fall into some, you know, some mistake that gets us in trouble. We're solvent. We make sure that we have a surplus and are operating properly. John, let's pretend you had a crystal ball and looking at what's going on in the insurance landscape right now with minimum wage rising and all of the things that are happening in the legislature, what do you think is going to happen in the insurance market in the next couple years?
Sure. Well, do I have to pretend I have a crystal ball? Because I actually have one. No. So workers' comp or insurance markets, they're cyclical. They operate much like the stock market does. They go up, they go down, and then they go back up again, and they go back down again. And it's a continuous cycle. Typically, workers' comp insurance works on roughly about a 7-year cycle up and down. However, currently, we're sitting at about coming up on almost 13 years of a really soft or good market, which is very, you know, like with real estate, there's buyer's markets and there's seller's markets. Well, a soft market is a buyer's market. If you're an employer, this has been a really good time. Low rates, lots of access, lots of coverage, lots of policies. Things are stacked in your favor. However, you know, while the market's been soft, it's going to get hard. And there's a lot of events that are happening in the world that have been happening that typically will cause this market to turn hard. Things like wars, conflicts, volatility in the stock market, interest rates rising, all of these things, inflation, any one of these can trigger it, all of these together. I believe we're sitting kind of on the edge of the cliff of the market shifting from soft to hard in workers' comp. And what that's going to mean is when it does shift, rates are going to go up potentially dramatically. But the other thing that'll happen is when the scary thing is for some people is that most employers today and most brokers today have not lived through a true hard market. Because again, we haven't had one for 13 years. And in a hard market, carriers exit California. They no longer write business. A good example of this is State Fund, California State Fund, which is the insurer of last resort. In the last hard market, they had over 60% of the market share. They wrote 6 out of every $10 of business in workers' comp. Today, in the soft market, after so long, they're only writing 11% of the business. Well, it shifts. When it goes back, and the reason they write so much business in the hard market is because all the other carriers that people do business with stop writing business, or they exit the market, or they raise their rates so high that nobody can afford to buy the insurance. The benefit of self-insurance as an alternative is self-insurance. Some people, again, don't know that it exists or it's a best kept secret. It's been around for more than 105 years. It provides a very stable market for people through all markets, hard, soft, all economies. It's very stable because you're only paying for the claims and the loss control and the regulatory pieces of it.
One last thing I want to cover with you, John, is XMODs, experience modifications, that insureds experience in traditional market, but that don't exist in self-insurance. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, that's a great question. So many employers are aware they have an XMOD or X-modification issued by the WCIRB. And it basically says that, 1.0 is if your premium is, as an example, $100,000 a year and you have an XMOD of 1, then in theory, you'd pay $100,000. It would be consistent. However, if you have a catastrophic loss, or maybe not catastrophic, but a large loss of some type, or you have a lot of little losses even, they add up, your XMOD will go up. And it's an adjustment. And your XMOD might jump to 1.2, 1.5, 2.0. And if that happens, what that's telling the carriers are, instead of charging $100,000, at 1.5, you should charge $150,000. And that XMOD will follow the employer for about 3 years after the accident or the losses occur. Well, when you become self-insured or join a self-insured group, you don't have an XMOD anymore. It goes away. Self-insurance doesn't have those. And the other benefit on underwriting with a self-insured group is instead of the self-insured group will look at what your actual loss experience is. And they will be aware that if you had one event that was kind of not normal, then they're not going to hold that against you as they're rating and underwriting your policy. Obviously, if there's an employer that doesn't care about safety, has lots of accidents and really doesn't care, the underwriting process, that's not a good candidate for self-insurance.
And throughout the time that CRNBC has been in business, we've had a lot of restaurant owners come to us under exactly those circumstances. They had one shock loss, and then in the traditional market, they couldn't get away from it. But then coming to us, we were able to write them at a reasonable rate.
That's exactly correct. And again, if you have a shock loss as an employer, you have one loss, you get penalized for it. And that penalty follows you for about 3 years before it goes away if you have a complete clean record during those 3 years. Whereas in self-insurance, that one shock loss can be overlooked. And especially if there's an explanation for how it occurred, why it occurred, why it's an abnormality and not the way you do business.
Well, John, like I said earlier, we could talk about this all day, but this is all the time we have left for today. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your expertise with us about self-insurance, and I hope to have you on again in a future show. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kay.
Thank you for joining us on the Self-Insurance Podcast brought to you by CRNBC. If there's a topic you'd like to learn more about, or if you have any questions, please email us at info@crmbc.com. Make sure to subscribe, comment, like, and share, and please join us again for more self-insurance insights.